Hello, hello, and welcome back to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. My name's Diane Bortoletto, and I'm your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan. And today I'm in Margaret River and I'm joined by Kira. Welcome back to the show, Kira.
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm delighted to be here.
So Kira Gillen is the co-founder of Formula Live Pulse app, which is, I got to use it for this race, for the Las Vegas Grand Prix, because I happened to watch the race live. It was on a very, very friendly time zone in Australia, which doesn't happen all that often. So it was fantastic to be able to have the app running while I was watching the race. But just tell us, Kira, where are you?
So I'm based actually in Berlin in Germany. I'm Irish, obviously, or maybe not obvious to a lot of people, but yeah, I'm in Berlin.
And it's only been a few hours since the end of the Las Vegas Grand Prix, which is the third last race of the Formula One season. And we've had some breaking news. Both McLarens disqualified from the race in a race where Lando had qualified on pole and Max actually qualified second, won the race. Lando finished in second, George Russell in third, and Oscar Piastri ended up finishing in fourth because Kimi Antonelli in fifth had a 5-second penalty. But the two McLarens have been disqualified, and that is for, do you know what that's for? I know what it is, but I don't know the actual technical terminology.
I think it's for the wearing of their plank, that it was too, it was below the measurements that it was meant to be. It was similar to what Lewis Hamilton was disqualified for in China.
Exactly the same. Yeah. I think it's the bottom plate. I think it's meant to be 9 millimeters thick.
I have it on our app because we have all the documentation on our app. FIA documents. Let's see, Las Vegas. Here we go. The thickness of the plank assembled was below the permitted minimum thickness. So it was breach of Article 3.5.9. They were disqualified for the same thing. I mean, you couldn't have written it.
No. So in a race where Lando looked like more or less he had the championship, he was in a very comfortable position for the Drivers' Championship. This has just changed everything, right? Like everything. Yeah. So the driver standings, we'll just talk about this right now off the bat because this is the hot news, right? In the driver's standings, Lando Norris still leads with 390 points because of the disqualification. So he didn't get the 18 points he would have got for finishing in second place. And Oscar Piastri and Max Verstappen are both equal second on 366 points, but they're not quite equal second, are they, Kira?
No, so Piastri is actually second with 7 victories and Max has 6, apparently. So
okay.
So they have the same points, but Piastri has a little bit of an edge with extra victories.
At the moment. Okay. Yeah, with Max still on a charge this season, and he just proved that in Las Vegas, qualifying in second on the grid. Lando tried to cover him off on lap one, corner one, and just overshot it. And Max took advantage and took the lead and didn't look back.
It was so impressive.
It was really impressive. It was kind of good to look. I'm just trying to be fair and impartial here. So Australia, please forgive me. But it was good to see Lando, you know, give it something, you know, get the elbows out, knowing how aggressively Max drives. Lando tried to, I guess, prepare for lap one and do the same, but it backfired on him and Max got the lead straight away and that was it.
I was just really glad that Max actually went for it. Thought, oh, maybe he's in, you know, he'll play it safe and then he'll try and get him later. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, if he wants that lead, he's got to take it at turn one, because if he's got any pace, then he's in the free air and he's gone, which is what happened. Obviously, in previous races, when he's gotten the lead on Lando has had the more pace, so he's able to catch him. It was great to see, in the sense of the championship battle, it was great to see Max go for it and not be afraid, because obviously we've seen other crashes happening. People go for things in the last few races.
Qualifying was pretty awful. I think it's the first time, well, certainly this season, I can't remember the last time we saw the full wet tyres being used. And in fact, in, I think it was episode 37, when Simone, your partner in business and life, came on and pretty much said that the wet tyres never get used. So that changed in Las Vegas.
Vegas was mad. And I have to say, like, for me, I'm post Drive to Survive fan. So I've been watching it kind of 21 thereabouts. I don't think I've seen in those years at quali with, as you said, with full wets. Like intermediates, yes, but like full wets, no. And yeah. I kind of expected it to totally throw up. Like maybe we would have had Hulk up there as a pole sitter or something. It was pretty crazy. Yeah.
It was really crazy. And qualifying in Q3, Oscar got caught out by a double yellow flag where I think he backed off a little bit. And then that, I mean, those double yellows are really irritating because as soon as someone goes off the track, the double yellows flash up straight away and then they switch off. I mean, if that driver gets back on the track and continues on without them having to clear anything, if there was no impact on the wall or on somebody else. So that's what happened. So I feel like Oscar lifted off and ruined that last lap that he was doing in qualifying. Not that he would have qualified much higher. I'm not really sure about that, but he did end up qualifying in fifth place. So not great. Third row of the grid, and Lando qualified on pole. But Oscar was showing some promising times during quali. Yeah,
I disagree. I think Oscar would have, I don't think he would have got pole, but I think he would have got second or third. As you just said, he was showing some promising times, and I really think he had it in him. I completely agree about the unfairness of that time. Well, the timing, nobody could do anything about it. He was in the middle of his lap, yeah, and had to step off. You can really see how qualifying badly has impacted his last three races, at least. You know, he hasn't been able to make his way through that pack as much as we thought he would with the car that they had earlier in the year, you know. So it was such a pity for him, because if he had qualified better, of course, it would have been disqualified.
It wouldn't have mattered if you qualified on pole and Lando was last, because they both got disqualified. What a disaster for McLaren. I mean, not for McLaren. They've already got the Constructors' Championship sewn up, right? This just changes everything for the driver's title, like everything. So there's 24 points in it now. So Lando's leading by 24 points with Oscar and Max right there. Max is on a charge. Max is in form. Max can smell the World Drivers' Championship and he wants it.
I think Max has got nothing to lose. He's got nothing to lose. I hope he really goes for it. I mean, I'm very torn because I would like to see a new world champion. Obviously, I would like to see Piastri, as I mentioned on the podcast before. It's funny because, like, Simone, my partner, was when Max was winning, was not a big Max fan. But now, now that Lando is possibly getting it, he's all supporting Max. So it's really interesting to see how people kind of switch their allegiances. But part of me would like Max to do it just simply to spite Norris, which is terrible to say because Norris has proven himself quite a bit over this year. But I don't know.
Yes, but, you know, he's also had the full support of Daddy Zach and the team. So Norris has had great races and great results and also the full support of the team. And I feel like Oscar hasn't had that. And in fact, Pierre Gasly and Max Verstappen have been quoted during the week as saying that you don't just forget how to drive all of a sudden. And for Oscar to always be either beating Lando or within a tenth, to all of a sudden be 5 tenths, 4 tenths off the pace, something has happened. Something has happened to the car. And Oscar's even, you know, been talking about that he hasn't been able to find the rhythm with the car or getting to grips with the car. He's had to change his driving style to suit the car. And yeah, so, you know, obviously the car has been tweaked that for Lando. It's working beautifully for Lando and it's not working beautifully for Oscar, which hurts.
I do feel the same way that something has changed and it has not benefited Piastri. Of course, Lando fans, McLaren fans would argue differently, but I do think it is a pity to see a team that prides itself on equality not being able to be equal to both its drivers and both the drivers who are really just world class. Like, I do strongly believe, and I'll probably be very repetitious for people in saying this, that Piastri is a world champion and he will win a world champion at some point. I really do feel it. Like, in his third year in Formula One, and he's already put massive pressure on a driver who's been there 7 years. You know, I don't think it's necessarily shady, but I think that there is a focus more on Lando being golden boy, being long-term McLaren driver.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You know. Just jotted down some career stats, you know, thinking about exactly like you said, Oscar's third season. So Lando Norris has had 151 Formula One race starts compared to Oscar's 68. So he's had not quite triple the experience of Oscar. Lando has had 11 wins and 44 podiums, whereas Oscar's had 9 wins and 24 podiums. I mean, the car wasn't great when Lando was first with the team. That's why he hasn't, in my opinion, why he's not showing better results as far as race wins and podiums. Whereas Max has had 231 race starts and 69 race wins after winning here in Las Vegas and 125 podiums. Also on 150 race starts is George Russell, and he's had 5 wins and 24 podiums. Just interesting how close those two are, given the experience levels are like vastly different, but the results are really kind of close. Oh my God, this championship battle is just so intense at the moment.
100%. But I think this is it. I think people kind of forget, you know, in a way that like Piastri is only in his third year. Like the guy, I mean, I don't come from it, but I could be wrong. I think Lewis won in his first year, or if not his first year, yeah, it was his second year. So it's been done. And I also think they're coming into this year, there was a lot more pressure on Norris to succeed as a more senior driver. Yet you're right, the car was never really great. They were a midfield team until 2 years ago, but there was more pressure on him. And then suddenly to have his second driver, the guy, his teammate, fighting him for the championship, like, oh my God. So
leading the championship at some points, right?
Leading, yeah, the championship for most of it. So in some ways, Norris is quite impressive that he actually managed to keep himself calm and get back in the lead, et cetera, et cetera. But also really you expect it of him being the guy who's been in Formula One 7 years or 4 years more than his junior driver. I mean, okay, he's not junior, but you know.
Yeah, than Oscar. Yeah, absolutely. Oscar's had a phenomenal season, but it's not over yet. And it could be like an amazing season. With 2 races to go, there are 58 points up for grabs because we've got a sprint race coming up as well in Qatar. There's a lot to fight for. Like if Lando has a DNF, he almost ran out of fuel, didn't he, on the last lap, where he had to back right off on the last lap of this race and, you know, get it over the line. And like he had a buffer of time, you know, Max was 10 seconds in the lead and George Russell was 10 seconds behind him. He had the comfort of being able to back off and just make sure that he had enough fuel to actually cross the finishing line, but wowzers. And should give a shout out to Kimi Antonelli, who held up Oscar. It was, you know, hard to watch because I really love Kimi Antonelli, not quite as much as I love Oscar Piastri, but Kimi did so well. He did 48 laps on the hard tyre. Nuts, right?
And it's just, yep, like, come on, this guy pitted on lap what? Wait, so 48. Yeah, so he pitted on lap 2. And then I was like, okay, he's got to pit again. There's no way. And only for that 5-second penalty. Well, of course, obviously everyone's been disqualified, but only for that 5-second penalty was Piastri saved. I couldn't believe it when Piastri couldn't take him. And then Charles couldn't do anything either. I was just like, this is crazy. The guy has like double the length of tire age than you guys do. How? Yeah, it was mad. No, fair play to Kimi. Yeah, he really kept his cool.
Did really well. Yeah, absolutely. And he did get that 5-second penalty for the slightest of slight jump starts at the start. It was, I mean, even in slow-mo replay, it was barely a move before the lights. But rules are rules, and the FIA are stickler for rules. So he crossed the line in fourth, but ultimately finished in fifth.
But now is third. Because of the disqualification.
Absolutely right. Yes.
Wow. He really is one to watch as well. Mercedes made a big fuss of getting him, signing him, bringing him on, and everyone was kind of criticizing him during the season. But he really is a quality driver, and I do think he's going to be one to watch, definitely, as the years go on, you know?
Yeah, so that puts both Mercedes on the podium, which they weren't on the podium live because the FIA hadn't done their scrutineering of the cars yet and hadn't disqualified the McLarens. But just running through the top 10, so we had Max, obviously, who won the race convincingly, George Russell in second, Kimi Antonelli now in third, like you said, Charles Leclerc in fourth, in the Ferrari. Well, let's talk about Ferrari. We'll talk about Ferrari in a second. Oh, Carlos Sainz in fifth in the Williams. Isaac Hadjar in sixth in Racing Bulls. Nico Hülkenberg in seventh in the Kicks album. Lewis Hamilton, that, yeah, promotes Lewis Hamilton to eighth, whereas it was initially 10th in the other Ferrari. Esteban Ocon scores points in the Haas, and Ollie Bearman scores points in the Haas as well. Yeah, wow. And then Fernando Alonso was 11th, the old boy. Then Yuki Tsunoda, 12th.
Yeah, Fernando had a few moves on track, though, I saw. I think at one point he was challenging Lewis, and then Lewis was complaining, not about him necessarily, but just about the car. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, I mean, those two have got beef. Like, they've always had beef, Lewis and Fernando. But Ferrari, that's all anybody has been talking about for the last week, right, was John Elkann, the Ferrari CEO, coming out and saying that, you know, they've got great mechanics, they've got a great car and a great team. And what did he say? Like, it was just...
talk less and focus more on driving. That's what he said. I don't agree with it. I'm sorry. You've got a 7-time world champion and a man like Charles who's devoted his whole career to Ferrari and to believing in you guys and going through all the ups and downs. And then you say that about them. And I'm just like, no, come on, you. Ferrari, like, I get that they're old school. I get that they're a certain system and they've been in the industry since day dot. But the way that they're doing things, in my opinion, is just backwards. They haven't won a championship since 2008. It's nearly 20 years. Something has to change, really, you know, and if you don't listen to your drivers at some point, then who are you listening to?
Well, exactly. And that's the whole reason they brought Lewis in, right, was to have, it was a combination of things, but to have someone with Lewis's experience of winning 7 world titles, like you said, and being with a winning team for 6 of those titles, knowing what a winning team, how it operates, what's required, and then to not listen to your drivers and then publicly criticize them. But interestingly, Charles has come out, and I think Lewis has come out, both kind of in support of what John has said. So I don't know if there's a PR game going on here behind the scenes or what is really going on. But Charles said, no, John called me beforehand and told me what he was going to say. And I know where he's coming from. I know the intention behind those words. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. I don't know.
He's the loyal soldier, Charles.
Yeah, he's a loyal soldier. Post-race interviews and Lewis's interview after the race, which I watched Sky Sports this time because I knew I'd be chatting with you and that you watch Formula One TV. So I watched the Sky Sports feed. And look, I will pay credit where credit's due. They did a pretty good job this week, Sky Sports. It wasn't the Lando show. It wasn't putting down Oscar. I felt like, in general, the commentary was more balanced. So that's a good thing. And one thing that last week or last race, when I did watch Formula One TV, I really missed the animation that you get with the Sky Sports commentary team, which with the F1 TV commentary team, it's a lot more subdued. It's a lot less animation, you know. And my husband made a comment saying, these guys are boring to listen to. You know, when you compare it to Crofty and Ted Kravitz, who just very emotional. They had Jensen Button in the commentary team for Las Vegas. I like Jensen's commentary. I think he does a great job.
Yeah, I mean, they are definitely more subdued. You do feel like they're in their sitting room drinking tea, watching the race. Like, they're that is true. That is true.
It sounds like Crofty's like 4 beers in and getting so excited. If I'm starting to drift off or get a bit bored with the race and I might be scrolling on my phone or I might be reading all of the team radio interactions between drivers and engineers on the Formula Live Pulse app, Crofty's voice makes me look up because it's like, oh, something exciting's happening. Oh, there's action.
We either watch it in Italian, then I don't know anything that's going on, or we watch it on F1 TV.
But the reason I did bring up Sky Sports was because they interviewed Lewis Hamilton after the race. And he was, you know, when he's had a really bad race and he's just not happy, he just says 4 words. And it was like that. He was so down and so unhappy. Even Charles was unhappy, you know, but Charles made a point of saying that he thought he drove as best as he possibly could, that he made very few mistakes. It's just the performance is not there. Made a point of saying, it's not me, it's the car. So I thought that was quite interesting, given everything else that's been going on with Ferrari this week in the media.
I really did feel for Charles because I thought he was doing really great on the mediums and like he was flying through. And then, you know, he took Piastri and I was like, oh my God, poor Piastri. But I was like, okay, Charles, if I'm not going to be able to see Piastri on the podium, I want to see Charles. And then he's up there and he's fighting with Sainz. And then the only good call that McLaren did for Piastri in the last X number of races was pit him to undercut the two cars. And I thought, oh my God. And even the commentators were saying the same thing. They were like, Charles is probably sitting there wondering when obviously he'd finally pitted, how the hell am I suddenly behind this guy that I had already overtaken? And then he just never got it back on the hearts. I mean, he was close, but Piastri had DRS to Antonelli and that was it. I do. I feel for Charles. But I also was kind of disappointed. But if you knew that Antonelli had a 5-second penalty, why didn't you try and keep closer to Piastri? I mean, initially he did, but then he just faded off. And so Antonelli got that one position that he, you know, he could have gotten. So again, yeah, the car goes back to the car for Ferrari.
Yeah. And probably CEO, actually. If something has to change, maybe they should start at the top.
Yeah. Well, what was it they were saying about the winning Ferrari team principal, Jean Todt?
Yeah.
That he was there like 7 years before they actually won a championship. That it takes time with Ferrari. But with all the team principals in the last few years, it's after like 3-4 years, they're like, okay, bye. See you later. Next. Yeah. And this conveyor belt, and no one's given a chance. And it also seems to be behind the scenes of what they can actually change, because there's stuff that just seems very old school in Ferrari.
Even just the communication, Lewis qualified 20th, last, like last and on the starting grid. He started in 19th because Tsunoda changed a power unit. So he started from the pit lane and Hamilton was up 19th on the grid, but he started last because his race engineer didn't communicate to him that he was not safe. So he didn't do another flying lap.
Crazy.
That's a sloppy. That's a major, major error.
I wonder, they don't seem to gel Lewis and his race engineer. I can't remember the guy's name. But there doesn't seem to be, and there doesn't even seem to be that kind of like, I know that, you know, the race engineers can kind of, the drivers can grade against each other when there's too much pressure or whatever else. Mm. But they all seem to, majority of them all seem to have some sort of a kind of a friendly rapport. Mm. Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with you. It feels like all season. I mean, I know it takes time to settle into a new team. It's not just a new team. It's Ferrari that comes with 75 years of Formula One history or baggage or whatever you want to call it, and the Ferrari way of doing things, a different culture, a different country, working with Italians. I've got Italian background. Your partner's Italian. We know how Italians operate, and it's not always linear or logical. It's all over the place sometimes, but they usually get to the same result. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason with the way Italian systems are. But just try going to the post office in Italy as an example. That's another story. So Lewis has had to contend with such a mega huge change. So of course that's going to take time. But I agree with you. He just doesn't seem to have gelled with his race engineer. And I mean, it's got to be hard after being with Bono at Mercedes for such a long time. And him and Bono were close, they were good mates, and they just could understand each other with one word, and he doesn't have anywhere near that same kind of rapport with his Ferrari race engineer, and it's showing.
It's definitely showing. And I also wonder, like, you know, you spend $80 million on bringing this driver in, but you think you would be doing stuff behind the scenes to make it work for Lewis. Yeah. The way he's performed over the last couple of races, for me, it, you know, if you didn't know anything about Lewis Hamilton, you would be looking at this guy going, oh, he's a choker and he doesn't know what he's doing. And it's like, no way. This is a 7-time world champion. I'm sorry, but no, something else is wrong here. Obviously, Lewis makes mistakes and he holds his hands up. I don't remember if it was the last race in Brazil or in Mexico where he was very upset because he felt he had let the team down. And he was like, you know, very emotional at the interviews afterwards saying, it's not good enough. I've let the team down. I'm so sorry. So he does hold his hands up. But I just feel like, as you mentioned, the cultural difference, all the different things, it just doesn't seem to be there. You'd think that they would look at it and go, okay, how can we make this relationship more symbiotic, work better, you know?
I mean, maybe they are, and maybe it's just not working. I don't know. Like, we're not really, unfortunately, not privy to what's going on behind the scenes, even though we want to know everything. Like, we just don't. Yeah.
So we need a spy in Ferrari.
Yeah, we do. I'll just run through the Constructors' Championship because there's still battles going on there. Even though McLaren's got it sewn up, so they're sitting on 756 points. In second place is Mercedes on 431. Then 40 points behind is Red Bull Racing on 391. Now, with Max on a charge, Mercedes should be worried. And then Ferrari on 378. So Red Bull Racing, 391, Ferrari, 378. Then there's a big gap to Williams in fifth on 121, Racing Bulls on 90, Haas on 73, Aston Martin on 72, Kick Sauber on 68. Oh, so there's another battle there, 7th, 8th and 9th. And then Alpine dead last on 22.
Wow. I do wonder if next year, I mean, Briatore is... I mean, lots to say about Briatore, but I do wonder about Alpine next year if they'll come back, you know.
Well,
I don't know.
I think Christian Horner's still sniffing around and he wants to own a Formula One team. So that could be the one that's up for sale or up for some more investment or up for a leader who knows how to win world championships in recent times without cheating. So you never know. You never know. Apparently, Christian Horner's not allowed in the paddock for a full year. With gardening leave, we're just going to have to watch this space. But speaking of teams and selling teams, obviously Toto Wolff's selling 5% of his share of the Mercedes team, which is valued at $6 billion, according to the agreement. Every team is valued over $1.56 billion. Wow. It looks like that the buyer of that team is the CrowdStrike co-founder, George Kurtz, with the team valuations. In 2018, McLaren had a $137 million loss. So that's 2018. It's not even that long ago, right? 7 years ago. Then 2024, they had a profit of $61 million, whereas Mercedes had a profit of $202 million last year.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yep.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
And just before we move on, I want to give a shout out to Lewis Hamilton's helmet. That sparkling helmet was a thing of beauty. I absolutely loved it. And I'm just sorry it didn't bring him better luck.
No, right. Yeah, it was lovely. I'm a pink girl as well, so I was admiring Piastri's helmet as well.
And speaking of pink, the Lego car that took all the drivers from... Because Vegas is, the setup's strange, isn't it? So the drivers park their cars in Parc Fermé and then they have to be transported to the podium, which is in another section. And they were transported in a pink Lego Cadillac. All three of them in the back there, that were 1, 2, 3, which was Max, Lando and George Russell. Obviously, Lando is disqualified along with Oscar. And that was a bit of fun seeing the Lego car on the track. And Lego have also joined F1 Academy as a partner. Yeah, really great. Really great that Lego are supporting the women's championship. And speaking of F1 Academy.
Yes.
Yeah, the championship's been sewn up. Yes. Massive congratulations. Dorian Pung, who won it for Mercedes, driving for Mercedes in F1 Academy. I don't know where she's from in France, but she's French, right?
Yeah, she's French. Delighted for her because I think she was very close last year as well, but she's been one to watch, so really delighted for her.
Yeah, me too. Thrilled.
Exciting.
Definitely. That was a very, very heartwarming moment, just watching her celebrate and be absolutely overjoyed, as you would be winning a championship. Congratulations to Dorian. That's brilliant. She's worked really hard. You can tell she's wanted this from day one. F1, The Academy documentary that's on Netflix is very good. So if you guys haven't watched that yet, I would highly recommend watching that. It gives you great insight into the whole championship and what it stands for and why it's really important and the personalities behind it. It's done really well. It's done like, you know, the first season of Drive to Survive without as much the drama and the tension that gets put into the production these days.
Yeah, it's well worth watching. Definitely.
Definitely. The other thing I wanted to talk about with the Las Vegas Grand Prix before moving on is firstly, the end interviews where Lando swore. So I'm waiting for the FIA to come out with a fine for that one, because initially he said, no, I thought I'd be nice and let Max win. And then he said, no, I'm just joking, I effed up. So he said effed up first, and then when a commentator went back and asked him about that again, he actually swore and said the word, I effed up. Waiting for the FIA to dish out a big fat fine for that one, because if Max gets a fine and all sorts of things for swearing, then it's only right that Lando should as well.
I thought it was in the interviews that they were more sensitive about it, but the commentator also apologized. So yeah, there might be a fine coming his way.
It's such a show, Vegas, right? The whole theatrics. And I actually quite liked the end show that they did. So there's like 1,200 fountains at the Bellagio Hotel, and they had this whole Mickey Mouse conducting the fountains that were moving up and down to music. I think it was like the Mickey Mouse song or a Fantasia song, not 100% sure, and the F1 anthem. So it was a bit of a mashup of the two. They had fireworks going on in the background. I actually quite liked it.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
I have been to Vegas. So yeah, let's talk about travel quickly. I went to Vegas as a backpacker. I caught the bus from Los Angeles to Las Vegas. It was a Greyhound bus, and I was traveling by myself. I booked into Caesar's Palace. It was in December as well, so it was a quietish time of year for Vegas. It's winter. So I was on my own, and on the Greyhound bus, there were a couple in front of me, and they turned around and started chatting to me. A bit older. I was like in my 20s, a bit older, and he looked like he'd just got out of jail. Like he had one of those faces that is deeply lined, a hard face. Someone that looks like they've had a hard life. And he said that he was an extra, and he played a criminal, like criminals in movies as an extra. And I can't remember what she said she was, but he did say that he had been to jail and that he'd found God and that he was a changed man. One of those kind of travel conversations are all of a sudden gets really deep really quickly. And then I started getting an icky vibe from both of them, and they asked me where I was staying, and I lied. I said I was staying at the youth hostel, because there is a youth hostel in Vegas. Well, there was at that time, because I don't want to be around these people. Like, and I didn't even want to talk to them anymore on the bus, but I was just being polite. I was young and dumb and just didn't want to say, leave me alone. Leave me alone, even though every cell in my body was tensing up, telling me, oh my God. And then they said, well, we can give you a lift to the youth hostel when we got there. And I said, oh no, it's fine. Really, it's fine. I don't need a lift. And then I got off the bus, pretty much got my luggage, and basically ran for a taxi. And I was just like, just start driving that way. And then once we were out of sight, then I said to the taxi, all right, now can you turn around and take me to Caesar's Palace, please? Yeah, it was one of those moments I felt really quite uneasy and unsafe. And yeah, I just didn't want them knowing where I was staying, because they knew I was traveling by myself. So it was just, yeah. But, you know, then I stayed at Caesar's Palace, and I really wanted to play craps. You know, the game you see on all the movies with the dice, where they throw it on the table and you've got to roll a 7 or an 11. But I didn't know the rules. So the croupier, I told him, I don't know the rules. I'm a young, dumb Australian girl. And so he told me the rules, and I played craps for a bit and ate off the buffet. And yeah, I found Vegas weird. It would have been more fun if I was with a group of friends, definitely. But because of that interaction on the coach, I had my guard up. Didn't want to have a few drinks, didn't want to be in any sort of altered state. I just wanted to stay sharp and just have my wits about me. I ended up doing a scenic flight over the Grand Canyon. And one of the benefits of traveling on your own is that when you do scenic flights in small planes, like I got to sit next to the pilot, like at the front of this small plane, and did this. Oh, it was magic. Like, the Grand Canyon is so colossal. It's absolutely spectacular. It really did take my breath away. But the whole time I was on the flight, I remember thinking, I just want to be on the ground. I just want to be on the ground and just be dwarfed by colossal rock formation, the canyons. The other thing that Vegas has are insane shopping malls, discount outlet shopping malls. So I went a bit crazy shopping. That was back in my shopping era, and I had a pretty long shopping era where I just loved, and I loved a bargain, being able to buy labels and, you know, designer gear or semi-designer gear at bargain prices. I maxed out the credit card. So that was pretty much my Vegas experience. Yeah.
That was.
Yeah, but I do remember seeing like Little Venice and Little Paris that they've got there. And I remember being really unimpressed by it and just finding it just not to my taste. If I was to go back, you know, obviously be older now, a bit wiser, it'd be fun to go back with friends.
Yeah, I've never been attracted to go to Vegas, really, to be honest. I mean, part of me wants to see it simply for the spectacle.
Yeah.
Say I've been there. But I get the feeling it's quite seedy and also just lacking kind of culture. There's a lot more interesting places to go in the States, obviously in the world, but also in the States than going to Vegas,
yeah.
I think.
The best experience I had in Vegas was the Grand Canyon, so outside of Vegas.
Mm.
Yeah, which I guess says a lot in itself. I mean, yeah. People love it. People love the atmosphere, like they find it all very exciting. And you're really like on the Greyhound bus that you really do drive through the desert, like there's just nothing. And then all of a sudden you've got this metropolis of lights and grand hotels and people with crazy wealth and people with absolutely no class. And then all this weird stuff going, you know, like the Elvis wedding chapels and things like that. It's another world.
Yeah. Yeah. And then compare that to Qatar, where the next race is. So
Qatar, so that's a sprint race, sprint weekend we've got. It's all to play for, really. Like one DNF from Lando and...
I have a thing here about Lando becoming world champion in Qatar. Mm-hmm. If he outscores both Max and Oscar by 2 points across the entire Qatar weekend, sprint and the race, so to win the title. So he only needs to be 2 points ahead of his rivals to be champion. So, for example, if Lando finishes P2 in the race and Max finishes P3, Lando gains 3 points, champion.
So he only needs 2 points ahead of
Oscar
or Max to take the driver. Oh, gosh. Unless one of them wins, then...
He needs to have a terrible weekend in Qatar, really. That's, I think, really what the gist of it is. Because he's, 24 points ahead? It's a full win and him not getting anything, you know. So, yeah, I think he really needs to have a terrible weekend and either Oscar or Verstappen has to win, has to do really well. He's very close.
It is. It's nail-biting. Yeah. I hope it goes down through to Abu Dhabi. I hope it's decided at the last race because that's, you know, as fans, that's what we want. We don't want it all sewn up and for Abu Dhabi to be a parade lap. We want to see him racing down to the wire. So let's hope that the championship battle stays alive. The other thing I just want to talk about before we wrap up is Cadillac. Joe Guanyu, who's the Cadillac reserve driver, has been announced and has done some, and Sergio Perez has done some testing, funny enough, in a Ferrari, the SF23 at Imola, which is a 2-year-old Ferrari. They've also signed up Colton Herta, the US driver, as Cadillac's test driver. And yeah, Cadillac will be using a Ferrari engine and gearbox in 2026 while they, you know, develop their own. It's going to take some time, I think, for them to develop their own, or maybe they'll continue to be a Ferrari customer team. Not 100% sure. So Sergio Perez, without a contract in Formula One this year, has been out testing and Valtteri Bottas will be joining him straight after the end of the season. I think the season ends, I think it's December 7th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
December 7th, and then Valtteri will be with the team from December 8th.
Yeah.
What do you think of their driver choice with Cadillac?
I think it's smart. I think it's very smart. Right. I think they're taking two drivers who have lots of experience, who've won races, who've come from winning teams. Yeah, it makes so much sense. But I think as a team who are coming in with no experience in F1, it makes so much sense to bring in two experienced drivers and work with them, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
I was just going to say that, I wasn't always a Perez fan. He did irritate me, but I am kind of delighted for him, you know, to get his shining hour, you know, in Cadillac. So fair play to him, you know.
Yeah, I quite liked Sergio Perez. I always felt like he was the ultimate team player. Like, he did things to help Max win championships, you know, holding other drivers up, and he really, you know, swapping positions. He really did play the team game to the letter. And I always felt like he was perhaps a bit hard done by Red Bull. I mean, Max was just such a talent that anybody and anyone who's been in the seat since him has paled in comparison to Max. I'm really happy for Mexico as well, because they seem to have like such passionate fans, and now they've got their driver back on the grid. Well, they will do next year, which is fantastic. And Valtteri Bottas, I don't know if you know, but he's Australian.
Oh, I didn't know. No, are you joking?
He's not. No, but we've adopted him because his partner is Tiffany Cromwell, who's an Olympic gold medalist in cycling.
Nice.
So okay, they've been together for a long time. And they've actually just bought a winery in South Australia that has chalets on it where you can go and stay. That just got announced, I don't know, last week. It was in the news. So Valtteri, yeah, he might be from Finland, but Australia has well and truly adopted him. He did this fabulous ad with Uber car share. So Uber in Australia have launched a car share where you can, Airbnb for your house, it's Uber for your car, where you can put your, if you're not driving your car, you can put it on this share app and basically rent it out, make some money from it. So it was a very Australian, total, just a parody. Like, it was hilarious. I want to say take, but I don't want to swear on the podcast. I don't know another word for it.
Tongue in cheek, maybe? Tongue in cheek?
Yeah, total tongue in cheek take on.
Yeah.
All of the Australian stereotypes. I'll try and find a link for that, actually, and put it in the show notes, because it was very, very funny. Yeah, we love Valtteri Bottas. I'm very happy to be seeing him back on the grid next year with Cadillac, with Sergio Perez. Yeah. So, well, thank you very much, Kira, for jumping on and co-hosting. And, gosh, so much to talk about after Las Vegas and two McLaren disqualifications, and the championship battle just heating up and the constructors heating up besides number one. If you guys have liked what you've listened to, please rate and review the show. Please subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube. All of those interactions really help us grow the podcast, which is the name of the game. You can find us on LinkedIn, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook. What am I missing?
Instagram.
Thank you. And Instagram. And you can email us at And away we go, F1podcast@gmail.com. Well, I'm Diane Bortoletto, and I've been joined by Kira Gillen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out, and away we go.
And away we go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto.
Let's do it.